Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Center Shkickers podcast. I am your most basic podcast host coming to you from my closet. It's been quite a while. That's how it goes. If you haven't checked us out at the ground level yet, you can find me and my buddy Sean chopping it up there. Anywhere you find your podcasts, even on the Rumbles, and I guess not YouTube. I guess it's just Rumble. You're going to have to ask Sean about the YouTube bias, but yeah, so it's been a while, right? Typical for this particular centrist kicker. And here I am coming to you on June 22nd, the day after we bombed three nuclear facility sites in Iran. And that is actually not why I'm getting together with y'all to talk. That's not what I'm talking about today. I guess it will be. I mean, it's definitely was the impetus for me to finally get off my butt and come sit back in the closet and talk to you guys. Because, yeah, it's concerning. It's fucking wild that here we go again with another Middle East war, some sort of conflict. If it's not Iraq, if it's not Syria, if it's not Afghanistan, now it's Iran. We're helping Israel. I mean, will we ever get out of this quagmire of the Middle East? Will we ever just, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. Is it peace in the Middle East? I remember back in the 90s, I feel like I've been hearing this my whole life. And, but once again, that's not why I'm getting together to talk to you specifically. You know how I like to do things, how I have to do things, because I can't get too buried in the weeds of details and reporting on this and reporting on that and dissecting every little fact and nuance and things like that. I mean, I could, but I'd probably go crazy. I'd probably never get anything done. And if you're going to bother to do all those things when you're just a blue-collar, basic American trying to go about their life, God forbid I had a good time or enjoyed myself at any point, I'd be writing a book, or I'd be like a journalist who's putting out constant essays or something on Substack and articles in, you know, major magazines or newspapers. I'm obviously not that person, so why would I bother to go down that rabbit hole? And you know, chain myself to those labors for nothing, just for my own peace of mind. I mean, that'd be nice, but the only way I can get peace of mind is just by trusting media sources and journalists that I tend to lean towards for accurate information. You know, everyone has their biases, which I, you know, understand, but I guess that's my point, is I don't go down those rabbit holes. So what do I do in the meantime? I try to look at things from 2,000 feet up. Like, what's happening? And really, that line of thought today has brought me to, like, well, what happens next? And I'm not just meaning with the Middle East conflict and Israel and Iran and blah, 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 or even Russia and Ukraine, or what's China going to do? I mean, those are high-level things to think about. That's a global perspective, I suppose. But I'm more thinking about what's going to happen next with America. I honestly feel like there's a lot of hard right MAGA folks who are certainly, well, there's the rumor of a split with the MAGA coalition. The independent centrist people like myself, who are extremely anti-war, who are tired of all these interventionist regime change conflicts that we keep getting into ever since 2001 and before, let's be honest, down in South America during the Cold War and all this. I mean, our country has a long history of trying to place puppet dictators or puppet governments in place. And other countries have done it too. So that's the way empires roll these days in the 20th century and 21st century. So I don't think I'm breaking news by saying that. But we're tired of it. We're tired of it because life in America is not super great right now. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's better than a lot of countries. I'm not trying to be unpatriotic here. I would not choose any other place to live. However, it's getting hard. For an American, it's getting hard. Now, granted, that doesn't mean there's people starving in the streets. Well, there are people starving in the streets. Never mind. It doesn't mean you can't own a home. Well, that's kind of hard to own a home. The basics of life, like gas, that's still cheap. No, not in this state or many other states in particular. I mean, some prices have gone down, but it ain't 89 cents a gallon or 99 cents a gallon, and there's no alternatives but fossil fuels, really, for your car. Even your fancy, cool electric car that you probably have is probably being powered by coal or some sort of fossil fuel, because that's what they burn to, you know, fuel the energy grid where you charge your car. Except Washington, we have hydropower, but then again, people freak out about hydropower too. So there's really no real solutions. But that's the point. So I'm giving basic. Oh, and then our infrastructure. Infrastructure is great, right? We live in like super fancy cities with amazing. No, we don't really. There's very few modern cities that have in America that have public transportation that's off the charts, or streets that don't have potholes constantly, or bridges that are being collapsing or in need of repair. I mean, there's a bridge over Eastern Washington, in Eastern Washington, when you on your way to a very cool music venue called The Gorge in George Washington. Check it out if you've never heard of it before. But the last time I was out that way, I was driving over this bridge and I could literally see through the concrete, see the rebar and the river beneath. That's wild to me. Granted, I'm sure some engineer came out, yeah, it's not a big deal. Like, yeah, the bridge is fine. The rebar is fine. All these other, you know, I don't know. I'm not an expert, but it's just some pleb driving across a bridge. You don't expect to see a hole to see down into the water. Anyways, so homes, gas, energy, medicine. Oh, good. Do we have an amazing medical system, right? No one ever goes bankrupt from our medical system. Yeah, right. So I'm just saying, for people at the ground level, your basic everyday American, things are not easy. They only seem to be getting harder. And here we are in another war. We've got money for this. We got the time. We got the energy. Is there the willingness of the American people to go along with this? I don't think there is. And so back to that split in the MAGA coalition. A lot of people are desperate for change. They're desperate for something to happen. I think a lot of people voted for Trump again, at least from the centrist or independent minded people who are like, well, it's either him and Kamala once again, a horrible decision we have to make. I don't want to choose either of these people. But it seems like I had more money in my pocket when Trump was around. It seems like things were maybe slightly easier. So I'll take the slightly easier over the unknown. And so they went with Trump. Trump wins the presidency. But a large part of that is we're done with these wars. Also, he seems like a guy who's just labeled the peace president, even though he dropped Moab bomb on somebody over in the Middle East. I can't remember. But that was like a standout issue. And then there's another one where he killed Soleimani, the Iranian general, who's supposedly orchestrating all these Iranian proxy militant groups like Hezbollah and the Houthis and things like that over in the Middle East that people don't like. So, okay, we take him out. Well, that's not very peaceful, but you know, it is what it is. America's always going to be doing something, it seems. But fair enough, he didn't start any wars during his first administration. Well, here he is. I don't see how this isn't starting some sort of larger conflict. So are people going to stand for it? And I'm guessing no. I'm guessing the answer is going to be, now the media is pushing hard. All the CNNs and MSNBCs, they're pushing hard for this new war. So we'll see what happens. You know, the hard Trump people are saying that there's not going to be a split. MAGA is what Trump says it is. And if he needs to go to war, we're going to justify it in some way. And that's the thing. You're justifying it. If you have to justify something, it's not like a 9/11 attack, right? It's not like we were hit. We have to go to war with these people now. This like this has to be answered with some sort of a call to action. This is really just Iraq all over again with the WMDs. Here I am saying I wasn't going to talk about this, and that's all I've talked about, but I got to get these points out. It's almost the same thing. Iran's going to have a nuclear bomb tomorrow, in a week, a month, a year from now. We don't know, but it's coming. They want the bomb. And you know what? I actually don't doubt that they want the bomb. I really don't see... Yes, the nuclear capability as far as nuclear power plant or something like that, and medicine, you know, lots of apparently medical technology requires some sort of levels of enriched uranium. Okay, fine. So the only other pathway to maintaining or being sure that Iran never achieves a nuclear bomb, which I think is a laudable goal, I don't want this crazy regime to have a nuclear bomb. I don't. But bombing them is a lot different than having inspectors, having a treaty, having being on top of them, making them bow to the will of the international community. Now, if that is even possible, that's the direction you go in. If you're saying that's impossible, the only way is to bomb these people, I don't buy it. I don't buy that no one has a choice in these things. And I think a lot of people are going to see that. Like, our only option is to bomb people and kill civilians and kill scientists. I don't have any love for Iranian leadership. Let me get that across right now. I'm not trying to defend them. And I think that, well, they can moderate. I don't think there's any moderation, a bone of moderation in these people. They're religious zealots. They have a hatred for America. And they've been saying it for decades. So I'm going to take them at their word. I don't think they're fooling around. And they're just breeding hate towards other countries and nations. Whether you think where it's justifiable or not. Like, there's plenty of Americans who hate America, ironically. So... that sentiment exists in the world, and I can't tackle all of it, but you're not going to decrease that sentiment by blowing people up, by not allowing a sovereign nation state to guide its own internal policies as much as like energy or science and things like that. So it's rotten ice that we're walking on, and it was always going to be anywhere in the Middle East, not just Iran, but Iran's the focus here. So is there going to be a split? Is what's going to happen? None of these problems that I just mentioned in America are going to change. So where does the country go from here? Where is our desire for a different kind of leadership? Where is that going to take us? Are people going to be out in the streets? Will there genuinely be an anti-war protest? I certainly hope so. I don't see how us bombing these three facilities in Iran will not lead to some sort of conflict. It certainly will put our troops, some 30, 40,000 that we have spread across the Middle East, and carrier groups that we have over there, I'm sure, they're all going to be at heightened alert, and they're also going to be in danger. I don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of days. it's constant motion now from what these militant groups are going to do, what China is going to do, what Russia is going to do. They're already intimating, you know, untying themselves to some degree from Iran, I suppose, or what I've heard. That's, you know, might be a good thing. I just don't know what's going to happen. Are the citizens of Iran going to rise up? That would be a miracle. If that were to happen and some sort of regime change through the people themselves, like a revolution in Iran happened because of this, because let's face it, just like any country, it's complicated over there. There's different factions. There's different politics. If a large enough group thinks that this is the time we need to rise up, they're weakened. The police state is weakened there, and we can do something about this on our own. That would be great. I don't know what would come out of that. It might be something just as radical as the regime we're dealing with now. Let's be honest. That's entirely possible. It could be someone who's more amenable to negotiations and, you know, like, okay, let's get back to, we still want nuclear power because we feel we need it for national survival and as an energy policy. Well, then that's fine. I mean, but then we're also back at the table of, we just need to make sure that radicals, because there's still plenty over there in that geographical area, that we got to make sure that those nuclear materials do not fall into the wrong hands. And that's an international thing. That's not just America and Israel doing that. That would have to be Russia, Europe, you know, China, places in Africa, obviously, countries that are going to have to partake in having inspectors go in and just say, hey, you're above board. Okay, great. Until one day that maybe we can just go, okay, we don't need inspectors anymore. Iran's a part of the international community and they're on the up and up. Like, I don't know if you ever believe that. But then again, why would anyone believe that we're on the up and up? We literally discussed dropping a tactical nuke on these sites. Granted, I don't think that's what happened. I think we just used big ordnance, like a traditional ordnance, to blow up these three sites, which is good. But then again, it's like we're the only country that's ever dropped a nuclear bomb intentionally on another, being Japan. We did it twice. So here I say, saying I wasn't going to talk about this, and I've been going on and on about it. It's just, obviously, it's top of mind, but I'm more curious was where this goes. Where does the country go after this? Because if we are truly dragged into a boots on the ground war, or it's just like another 5 to 7 year campaign of hunting Houthis and Hezbollah and all these other new proxy groups, I'm sure there's going to be new names we have to add to that list at some point, because it was Al-Qaeda at one point. It was ISIS at one point. There's going to be new militant groups that pop up for sure. Because hopefully we're able to take some of these people out, I guess. I don't know. But that's the thing, is do we have an appetite for that as Americans, spending how many more billions of dollars funding the military to go fight these terrorist organizations abroad? The war on terror never ends. There's always a new one. So what's America going to do? How can we survive as a nation when we keep ignoring the needs of the very populace that makes the nation what it is to go then have constant war abroad. I mean, that's the downfall of empires. I mean, that you start fighting on multiple fronts, you get other superpowers in the world, like maybe China goes, hey, America's probably not going to be willing to fight a war, seeing as they have anti-war uprising in America. Maybe we just take Taiwan. What are they going to do? They're going to fight in the Middle East and they're going to fight us? I mean, I know there's plenty of generals and people who think about these things, but a lot of the time they just seem like, yeah, we will. We will. Yeah, let's do it. We can do that. We'll not only take over the Middle East or quiet the Middle East and bring them to heel, we're also going to slap down China and we're going to keep sanctions. I mean, the idea that the planet is going to stand for this and that we can just do it all. Listen, I'm all about American exceptionalism, but it's mainly about the exceptional nature of our democratic republic and the people that come here, and that we are multicultural to some degree. That great melting pot, you know, I'm high on that idea that the best way to quiet internal dissent and make the country a hotter melting pot and bring these multicultural segments into a unified culture for as a nation state is to have a populace that feels that the country is on the right track, that they're being taken care of, that their needs are being met. And those things are always secondary. They're always secondary towards war, towards finding ways to make money through international commerce that often doesn't trickle down, God forbid, it ever trickled down to people like us. Like, what have we gotten out of the Iran conflict in 20 years in Afghanistan, or the Iraq conflict, excuse me, and 20 years in Afghanistan? Is Afghanistan in a good place? Is Iraq in a good place? No. How about Syria? Everyone talks about the forgotten conflict that Saudi Arabia or a Syrian civil war and all this. And I think some former ISIS or Al-Qaeda member is now at the head of Syria, and all those refugees that flooded into Europe that people complain about all the time, like, oh, this refugee crisis in Europe. Well, that's due to a Middle East conflict. And now we're stirring up another one. You don't think there's going to be another demographic shift somewhere in the world based on people escaping Iran, who has 90 plus million people in it? You don't think there's going to be people leaving? You think those other countries are going to be happy with their immigrant these immigrant populations or refugee populations that show up? There's just so many moving parts. Once again, it's difficult to clamp down on all of it, but it's time for some sort of leader to be independent from the corporate duopoly that we have, who are tied to these massive oligarchic multinational corporate interests and the Pentagon. I don't see that triangulation of our republic being undermined by money and the military. I think it's undeniable at this point. I don't see, it's not a conspiracy theory. And whether you want to go, it's the deep state, this, that, I mean, all those things start tying in, and my ears prick up a little bit more at these supposed conspiracy theories around all of this stuff. Because the bigger actions, the largest actions that our nation takes these days directly coincide with their interests and not ours. Back to all those domestic issues I brought up, energy, housing, medicine, infrastructure, all these things wither on the vine while we have endless supplies of money for constant war. And that is the real impetus. Like, I'm not so isolationist or pie in the sky, rose colored glasses view on the world, that there aren't bad people in the world. North Korea has a nuclear bomb. I wish they didn't. That's the most horrendous example of a country that has a nuclear bomb with apparently the capability of reaching at least the West Coast with an ICBM. And they're an absolute feudal, theocratic, anything you wanted to say about Iran, you could double down, triple down on what's happening in North Korea to that population of millions who are being starved and enslaved by a fucking crazy leader. That's the darkest pit of humanity right there in North Korea. And granted, you can say, well, the Middle East has got all these problems, but I don't know where I was going with that, I guess. Do you see where I'm coming from, though? Do you see the concern I have? because I don't see how this strengthens our country. I don't see how we become more exceptional. I'm all for some level of isolation if it helps the people who live here. Why can't we be exceptional in that direction? Why isn't that we? It's always the argument that these things are impossible, like, you know, infrastructure and developing, getting everyone access to the internet for, you know, opportunity and a unified medical system or national medical system is impossible. Well, if we're truly exceptional, why can't we do those things? We're so exceptional, but to a point. We're exceptional in that we can bomb people with impunity or other countries, but we can't supply the basic needs of the citizens of this nation. You know, housing is somehow a privilege now. I wanted this episode to be somewhat biographical because I feel more and more people are falling into hope. I mean, I know there's been studies, and I think I've even referenced some of them on past episodes of this show, that independent-minded people are growing. It's always the independents or unaffiliateds that are the growing population in the electorate. And I think it's over these things. People are tired of the Democratic Party. They have no real direction. The only direction the Republican Party has these days is Trump, and he's in his last term, we think. And who takes over for him? There's no obvious successor or direction in my mind that is going to offer anything different, that is going to solve these basic problems of our country. And so that's where I'm looking. I'm trying to look at everything like, where do we go from here? I mean, this is all really par for the course. It's sad and it's frustrating. It's maddening, actually. But it's pretty much status quo for the 40 plus years I've been alive and the maybe 25 plus years I've really dived and paid attention to politics. I mean, I was always on the periphery. I've said it on the shows, like having kids was the thing that really pushed me over the edge into, okay, I got to pay attention to what's going on in the world. Which is, you know, I don't think that's atypical. But so during that time, it's been nothing but this stuff. Even going all the way back to Kosovo, I remember watching those attacks Bill Clinton launched on. And there was like another country. It was Kosovo and their ethnic cleansing thing that they had going on. And we bombed and threw out. I can't remember the leader's name, but blah, blah, blah. Like, once again, another regime change. Conflict. So, I mean, I guess that independent streak in me, I've always been a little anti-authoritarian. I mean, I grew up like a disaffected youth, you know, into punk rock and things like that. But really, when I started diving into politics, I mean, I had conservative and or liberal leanings both. So I guess that's what kind of makes me that centrist that I claim to be. But it was really just being anti-party. I mean, I'm going to repeat myself again and again here, but it was always clear to me that neither of these parties really offered anything all that different. I mean, there was always a dividing line where, you know, traditionally it was Republicans who are the big corporate guys, but over the years it seemed more and more that the Democrats are exactly the same. That's why I describe it as a corporate duopoly. They say a lot of shit, but ultimately it seems like only a certain segment of our population's ends are getting met. The super citizens or the stakeholders or shareholders in our democratic republic aren't the people anymore. The power doesn't derive from us anymore. It derives from super citizens, super people, people with lots of money, people who can contribute to PACs, people who can, you know, they call them the donor class. These people are the ones who are really have the ears of our representatives, and therefore the levers of power lie more in their hands than it does ours. So how many broken promises does it take? Where is the real leadership? Not just convincing us knuckle draggers to vote, but, you know, using their legislative power to make a difference for the common man. The country needs a break with these parties. I mean, clearly, if a democratic republic is going to survive, it can't have the levers or... how do you state it? You can't have the leaves worshiping the blooms and forgetting about the roots, to put it somewhat poetically, I suppose. Our democracy has been hijacked by these blooms, by these super citizens, and I just don't think that's arguable anymore. I mean, this is the whole motivation behind the Stop Oligarchy tour and things like that. It's like, it's becoming apparent to more and more Americans, when you have Elon Musk essentially buying his way into the administration and other oligarchs who, you know, even the Bezoses and the Zuckerbergs and these people who, you know, flip on a dime when they're all pro Obama and then are now pro Trump. Explain that to me. They're not some free thinking, independent, you know, just small minded person like, oh, yeah, I could sort of see there's a little more money in my pocket, blah, blah, blah. No, there's real interest there. And they have the money to sway political interests. So why wouldn't they just switch sides? They don't care. And really, as far as this war stuff goes, you know, being a centrist, or what I claim to be a centrist, my version of it, I suppose, but it's a humanist endeavor. And so war is never going to jive with that, because war is as anti-human as it gets. It's an atrocity. I think every war is a crime. You can say I'm rose-colored glasses with that, but I don't want us to be so comfortable with war. And we really are. It's almost like everyone playing, you know, Modern Warfare and Call of Duty and things like that. That we're just like, oh, yeah, it's like a video game. It's all cool. And then, you know, you hear about, oh, the troops come back and they got PTSD and lost limbs and lives destroyed. And, you know, it becomes like, what did Stalin say? You break an egg, but it's like, or one death is a tragedy, but a million or a billion is just a statistic. And we hear about these things like in Iraq. I've heard claimed constantly that over a million citizens or people died in Iraq due to our occupation and the civil wars that and the sectarian violence that broke out there. A million people. And with some 500,000 in Syria, not to mention all the refugee and demographic crisis I mentioned before. I mean, these are lives upended, uprooted, destroyed, annihilated. And then we have the concern of our own troops is like, what about any of this is worth it at the human level? And so if human life and these things aren't sacred to you, which, you know, okay, if you're a nihilist, none of it matters, but justifying it, you have to do a lot of leaps, and you really have to put other people in a bucket. Like, real, these are people who are true evil. And if you go down that road and start justifying things to that level, I'll just say humanist doesn't describe you then. And you can look at me and say I'm some, you know, pussy-footed piece of shit who doesn't understand what evil is and thinks that, you know, you're just going to forgive everything and you're going to justify other atrocities based on these people doing whatever it is they want to do. Like, you know, Christians being beheaded or gays being thrown off of roofs or women being subjugated. But do you think that's what I'm doing when I talk about, when I just talked about North Korea? You know, all those things I'm against people who are anti-human. I know it's complicated, man. It's all just too frustrating. But yeah, I mean, humanism, let's just define it, I guess, is an outlook or system of thought attaching prime importance to human rather than divine or supernatural matters. Humanist beliefs stress the potential value and goodness of human beings, emphasize common human needs, and seek solely rational ways of solving human problems. War is rarely rational. The supernatural is clearly at stake here. I mean, you have two different, mainly religious, once again, a religious war, really, Muslim against Jew, and Christians backing the Jews because they hold a more tightly knit supernatural belief system. And then it goes beyond that too. I mean, I almost would say that there's some supernatural elements have been attached to things like communism or socialism and even capitalism. There's a good and evil dynamic that people constantly bring up with these economic beliefs. And so they become in a way supernatural. Like, you have to adhere to one or the other because clearly one's good or evil. And, you know, once again, humans have complicated all that through subversions of, you know, thought can be this pure, beautiful thing that comes out of your head. You write it down on paper, it spreads and becomes an ideology. And then those beautiful thoughts can be, oh, I'm going to take that and then subvert it to this other thing. And so, I mean, capitalism could be good. It could be amazing, but it could also be subverted. So can this a socialist idea, even a king or a dictator could be an amazing thing if they were, you know, used it the proper way, but he obviously can be subverted too. You want your philosophical king running your kingdom. That sadly is rarely the case. But anyways, the point being is anything is possible under any system. I certainly believe there's an amazing, it's possible that there's an amazing Muslim caliphate out there, or one day in the future that could exist, or an amazing Jewish state that's all Jews. I mean, I'm not saying those things can't exist. I'm just saying, they don't. is what I'm saying. And that's why I'm blue-blooded American here. I think this experiment that we're running here is a truly humanist endeavor, because it, you know, we can have multiple religions, multiple cultures, you know, coinciding around one culture. We are a nation of laws. That is our culture. It's like, if our justice system and the laws we have here aren't jiving with that endeavor, then we got a problem. And once again, I think that's what people are getting at with this anti-oligarch stuff, is the law applies to us, but it doesn't apply to you. Anyway, I'm going again. I could easily go down another rabbit hole there. what else do we want to talk about here? I mean, I'm trying to bare my heart here as far as how I'm a centrist. I can go to keep going down that as far as, you know, this country didn't start in the greatest way. I mean, it was only landed white men who could vote in the beginning, but, you know, so it's like, I can be critical of ourselves too. Like, we started with grand ideas that were subverted, but we overcame those things. I mean, we were refounded with the women's suffrage movement, which gave women the right to vote. We were refounded again after civil rights. And I think there's another refounding of this country that can happen after we wrestle control over democratic processes from multinational oligarchs in the Pentagon. I think it's easy for the idea of America, as grand and as beautiful as I think it is, to be subverted for other people's needs. And I really guess that's just the whole focus of this podcast. And I don't see this Iran conflict as anything else. Like I said, it's par for the course. This is the path we've been on for decades and decades. And slowly but surely, people are waking up to the idea that this can't continue. And independent-minded people moving towards the center, which you could also, I claim it as a humanist thing, but I think more accurately, maybe it's a populist thing. Populist shit kickers doesn't have the same ring to it, so I went with centrist. but it's true. A true populist uprising, I have to feel, is in the offing. And sadly, these demonstrators and stuff are always, you know, they get subverted by idiots like Black Bloc and Antifa and all these other militant left-wing groups who think that they have the real answers, or their only desire is to bring about the downfall of America. I think that's true. That happens. That's what's going on. There are, I'm not going to call them terrorists because I think that word is overused, but there are domestic agitators who want nothing more than to topple our system. I don't know what they expect to grow out of that. I don't think any sort of failed state is a good thing. And it certainly wasn't for Iraq. It certainly wasn't for Libya. A constant civil wars in Syria and all these other places in the Middle East. I mean, these are not, it's not a good thing to have a failed state. So where am I going with that? It's back to those common needs, people. There's a lot of imaginary barriers that divide us. We're after, you know, at the end of the day, we're only human beings grubbing about on this one planet that we have, and we do that for a depressingly brief amount of time. And I just don't see why we can't have our leaders focus more on human flourishing even if it was just for our citizens. Like I said, if we wanted to go around and find a country who doesn't have our same outlook on abortion or women's rights or racial rights or any of these things, are we just going to go to constant war with all of these people? Anything, anyone we deem evil, we can unleash a greater evil like war upon them to then hope that they change and somehow reflect the way we view the world? We're not even united enough here domestically on those fronts. We try to be. I mean, once again, I think that's the beautiful and great grand experiment that is America. We're trying to unite these disparate views and cultures and languages, blah, 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 and all this stuff and make it into one beautiful, truly humanist endeavor, a goal that, yes, we can all live together. It's actually possible. I mean, I'm not so foolish to think there's not going to be bumps along the road. Clearly there have been. I just mentioned them: suffrage, civil rights. We fought our own civil war. Excuse me. So it's not like there's not a process that can be ugly. But the end is always a more beautiful future. That's what we're striving towards. And I don't see how we're allowing that future. That future is getting further away with the actions of those in power in this country. You honestly think that the multiculturals will unite when we're under such strife? You know, when we're thrown with these imaginary barriers of, you know, privilege and white versus black, and what about the Asian population? And blah, blah. I mean, you can ask all these cultural questions that keep dividing us. Once again, all these different wedge issues that are mostly imaginary and or mostly so minute and small that they don't actually pan out the way people think they do. And those are the things that need to just be brushed aside so we can actually focus on people in power. And that's another populist sentiment I think that's growing these days, is who's actually in power? Why are we getting fucked over constantly? How do we take the power back to the people? Power to the people, right? I mean, it's how is any of it possible? Is it even possible? Is it possible without another conflict here in America? I mean, I think if there's going to be some sort of American civil war, it's going to be, I don't know. It's not going to be an organized army fighting our army. It's going to be uprisings. It's going to be cities shut down. It's going to be strikes. It's going to be things along those lines. And God forbid we ever had a leader who could truly grab on and actually mean it, on principle, mean it. And it would be a revolutionary thing. But that's the thing. In America, these revolutions are supposed to happen through the ballot box. So how do we take back our democratic process? How do we take back control for everyday Americans of all stripes, of all kinds? That's what this country is supposed to be. The power is supposed to derive from us. And the more powerless we are, the more our needs aren't met, the more nothing is addressed, the more people are desperate, it's easier to divide us. And I'm not a grand conspiratorial guy, but almost at this point seems like design. Or just an unwillingness or an ignorance of people who are so wealthy and out of touch with what it means to be an American, who have their groceries brought to them and have personal chefs who they probably don't eat fried food, but who fly private jets all around the country. They don't live in the same world we do. They don't feel our desperation and our need. They don't. So we either make them somehow, or you find a leader that comes up from the people and actually leads this populist revolt or a populist surge or sentiment and brings it into the halls of power and does something with it to actually help Americans. Because I'm not going to see a tax break, or I'm not going to be, housing prices aren't going to go down from us attacking Iran. Gas prices are likely going to go up. We're not going to be developing domestic nuclear program as far as, well, supposedly we're already thinking about developing new bombs, which, why? Why do we need more nuclear weapons? Our country alone could annihilate the whole planet, let alone Russia and China and everyone else who's got nukes. But apparently we're thinking about making new bombs, but not nuclear power plants. I don't understand, like, once again, these massive decisions that take so much of our wealth and treasure are always being directed outward or for defense or in the interest of other people and not ourselves. I mean, I don't know how many different times I can say that and how many different ways, but it's just undeniable and it's maddening and frustrating and all those things. It's just, I don't know. I guess I'm probably going to cut it there. So where do we go? We keep fighting. We keep talking about it. We keep looking at it. And it really, it's like these conflicts abroad. It's, I really want people to start focusing on what are you getting out of it? Are you more secure, truly more secure that Iran's gone or their regime was toppled? Was it worth the billions? How much longer can we ignore it? Oh, because there's always going to be another bad guy. There's always a boogeyman. China's the big one. And the funny thing was, is Kamala Harris was saying during her presidential run, when someone asked in an interview, and maybe I should try to provide the link, but you could easily look it up. Someone asked Kamala Harris during the presidential campaign who the greatest enemies of America were, who are biggest international or foreign policy concerns. And she said Iran number one. And so the idea that Kamala Harris, who I don't believe has ever given an answer that wasn't fed to her, she's saying that, and here we are fighting Iran under Trump. Tell me that that's not weird. Tell me that that's not designed. Tell me that that's not someone's had this plan from the get-go, probably for decades, about, well, eventually we're going to have to fight Iran. So we might as well start priming the pump and putting out these messages. And your safe, you know, progressive Democratic candidate, Kamala Harris, she's the one dumping Iran first as their number one foreign policy issue. Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Nothing weird there. Nothing to see. Or you just buy into it. Well, clearly should they? It's always, they got to know more than we do, right? That's always the thing. And granted, they should. They're the experts. They're the new clergy of our of the religion of America, is all the experts and the expertise and the insiders and this and that. I'm not comfortable with that, because I'm, if you want to paint me religious, I am definitely a oh God, now I'm going to forget. Not John the Baptist. Who's the the Protestant. I'm much more Protestant, as far as, I don't need your Roman Catholic Church. I don't need things to be spoken in Latin to me. Dumb it down. I can figure it out. I can at least see, you know, give me some real transparent truth. Don't hide behind experts and people who have inner knowledge and all the secrets that just allow for endless conflict and war. And, oh, just wait, don't worry, you'll get yours. Somehow we'll be better off. And once again, it'll all trickle down to you. Like, America will keep prospering because we're doing these things over here, while ignoring all these other major issues that affect your life, your parents' life, your kids' lives, and generations after. Meanwhile, oh, by the way, we're not worried about paying off this massive debt and deficit that we keep, or spending deficit and all the debt we have around the world. It's like, when are any of these issues going to be addressed? There's always something else more urgent, more pressing, supposedly, and it's constantly war. Anyways, I don't even know if I really addressed where we're going. I think the obvious point is we don't know where we're going either. There's going to be no real candidates pushed forward. I'm guessing in the near future, Trump is going to get his ass handed to him in the midterm elections. Democrats will come in, but Democrats have been completely feckless. They don't have any idea what to do. They don't know who their leaders are going to be. They're talking about Gavin Newsom and Pete Buttigieg, and there's just no appetite for real change in D.C. and even in your, more than likely in your local politics either. All the governors and stuff, like, everyone seems to be in a hurry to sell this country out because we can't do anything about it until we decide we can. And really, that's what it's going to come down to, is like, people just need to divest from these idiotic politicians who don't have your interests at heart, and find alternatives. I don't know. It's like, it's a constant trope. It's like, oh, run for Congress, run for city council, run for, a legislative seat in your state capital. And I'm not going to badmouth those things. We need that. We need it desperately. We have to start voting out the octogenarians and 70-year-olds and 60-year-olds who've been in office for 30 years. These people got to go. And new leadership has to take hold of the reins. And I'm hoping, I just see, I can't imagine that that's not where it's going to continue to go. It's just not going to happen fast enough. I mean, I'll probably be in my 60s by the time some of this stuff actually maybe starts to actually take hold. Maybe. But they're going to clamp down. And when they do, which some people are saying is already happening under Trump, they're saying that's what all this deportation stuff is, and the ICE raids and the ICE protests and sending the military into California. They're saying that's what this is. That's what that will look like. It'll just be more extreme. Because I have to imagine these uprisings and protests and stuff will get more extreme. And I'm hoping it happens sooner than later due to this constant interventionalist war bullshit that we keep getting involved in. I don't know, man. I'm trying to have hope, but it's difficult. I think that's about all I have for you today. I don't know. I just came on here to blab. I mean, it was about time. It's been too long, but I mean, when we start another conflict abroad, it's, you know, time to close the closet door and rant. So that's what I've done today. Go ahead and give us a follow. Go watch me and Sean. Sean and I will get together soon, I'm sure, to discuss these things and more. So give us a like wherever you listen to your podcast. Give us a follow, all that good stuff. It's weird saying that, but yeah, love you guys. And you know what? The best thing you can do is find your own peace of mind, though. You got to be centered in yourself first before you can really decide which direction you want to go. Strengthen those bonds and connections you have with friends and family. Find some order in your own mind and your own dwelling. Best of luck. Love y'all. Bye.